This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And once again, it's so good to be with you as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. In the first half hour, we have Dr. Ali Abadi. I get his name right here. He keeps correcting me, and I'm so sorry that I keep getting it wrong. Anyway, professor of electrical and computer engineering, University of Maine. He's worked with NASA, and he's co-inventor of wireless sensors for brain injury detection, which I find absolutely fascinating. His talk at Metricon is going to be on leak detection for the International Space Station. And so he's going to tell us about both of those that's going on, the leak detection for the International Space Station and wireless sensors for brain injury detection. I find them both quite fascinating. Then in the second half hour, Diane Collier, who's chairman of Metricon this year, is going to bring us up to date on what's happening with that particular conference, how it's developing. And it's so much fun because Diane and I are old friends. We go back years, and it's always good to have her on the program. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. Today we're going to ask the spirit of the fountain a very confounding question about Scotland. We thought that appropriate since Scotland's in the news so much lately with all that's going on with England leaving the European Union. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. So, remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz, webcast. Yes, it is. Anyway, we're looking forward to seeing everybody at Metricon. It's the 29th Annual Conference, October 26, 2016. If you want to know more about it, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link to the website for Metricon. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, of course, we're giving extensive coverage to Metricon, and we have with us an exciting speaker today, Ali Abadi.
My name is Ali Abadi.
Abadi, thank you. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Maine. He's worked with NASA and co-inventor of wireless sensors for brain injury detection. We're going to hope to learn a little bit more about that as the program goes on, but right now we're interested in what he's doing with NASA because the title of his talk at Metricon is leak detection for the International Space Station, which I understand he's been very successful with, and that has me totally in the dark. So welcome to the program, Dr. Abadi.
Thank you very much for having me.
And let's get into this a little bit. This is a leak detection for the International Space Station. We had no idea there was a need for leak detection, but I understand NASA is quite concerned over it and has funded some research on your part. Can you give us a little insight about what your speech will be like at the conference?
Yes, of course. So the main problem on board any pressurized vessel, is it a space station or just an aerospace kind of vehicle, or even here at home, if you have a propane tank or like oil pipeline or water pipes, anything is prone to failure and possibility of leak of either air or liquid or maybe even just heat and temperature, which is also important in space. So a space station has been built with extreme engineering standards to withstand the harsh environment in space, but as it ages and goes through the high doses of radiation, micrometeorite and space debris impact, or maybe just because of the hatches or airlock sort of surrounding and aging of those vulnerable positions is prone to leak. So this system that we have been working on for a few years as part of our research, development, and now implementation and test is an automatic system that is trying to determine the exact location of the leak with a very high accuracy so that it can inform the crew on board that there is a leak in this specific location, and they can go and fix it before it actually creates too much of an air pressure drop.
Okay, and I could imagine, they're not going to take a bathtub sealer or something and fix it with, and I don't know about welding in space. You've got, your oxygen and other things that are going on. I suppose the way that they fix it is kind of top secret but maybe shared with the other countries that have helped contribute to the space station.
We hope that some of these leaks are not really that critical when they appear in the first place. So it might be, let's say there is an airlock or the hatch that is leaking very, very slowly, and that is not even detectable by looking at the changes in the air pressure. So it's not going to be too critical, but it would be very simple for them to just maybe change the insulation around the hatch, or maybe just if it's a matter of having like changes in size or failure in the hardware, maybe in the next ISS shipment of logistical module, they can ask for some parts and fix it. So some of these are very mild. There is always the possibility of having high impact because of micrometeorite or space debris, which in a space language they call it MMOD. And that might actually penetrate the exterior shell of ISS. And again, there is multiple layers and there is lots of protection. So if there is some penetration from exterior layers, maybe it will require some spacewalk to go out and maybe patch it somehow from outside. And if it's going to be really severe and kind of makes a whole puncture going through, then that would be very difficult. But with this system, we hope that at least we can identify some areas that are not critical but can be fixed now to prevent like future catastrophes.
Oh, this leaves me open to so many questions. A lot of us novices here on Earth have been concerned for years about high impact from some space debris, either something that we've sent up there that is orbiting that gets out of control, or something that comes in from outer space, a piece of junk that ordinarily would burn up in the atmosphere and instead hits the space station. Has this happened frequently?
The hit to the space station and different parts of it is happening all the time. Most of these space debris or micrometeorite are so small that they are not really making much of an issue. But if you look at some of the pictures, for example, on the solar array that is powering the space station, there is lots of marks or kind of dents that you can easily see the space debris has hit. The space station is in an orbit which does not have too much of those problems, and also there are tons of Army and NASA radars that are tracking all these space junks around the Earth, which some reports state is over 15,000 to 16,000 pieces of objects being tracked. So if there is a possibility of big objects or maybe a group of them coming our way, we can easily steer away from it and try to kind of avoid it. But the other thing to remember is that most of the designs up there in the space have been done in such a way that they can withstand up to a special threshold. They can withstand the level of impact. So there will be lots of hypersonic tests and everything here on Earth before they actually go up. So yeah, there is the threat, but there's the cures as well.
Well, with these minute leaks that we were talking about just a minute ago, if they're not really that serious, they're not really that important, why bother?
That's a good question. So it's like in your home, if you have a very small leak in your water butt that you will never even notice, it may not be important in one day or one week, but imagine the importance of air up there in the space. So after a year or two, you will lose tons of air. But the other issue is that that a small hole may start to kind of corrode and gets larger and larger over time. So when it's too small, you may even be able to inject some kind of metallic liquid or some kind of polymer to fix it easily. If it gets too big, then you need to go out and actually patch it. So prevention is always the best way to deal with these kind of leaks.
All right. Well, you're detecting these small, minute leaks, and I wonder what you're using. Is it sound, or is it air pressure, or how do these sensors operate?
So imagine on a space station, inside there is high-pressurized air, outside there is vacuum. So when there is a very tiny, small hole, the air that is escaping from that hole is going at hypersonic speeds, maybe like twice as much as the speed of sound.
Okay.
So what you're going to hear inside is going to be an ultrasound wave. So of course the human ears cannot hear the ultrasound waves, but our system has ultrasonic microphones or sensors that are listening to those ultrasonic waves and trying to determine the location using multiple devices placed in multiple locations.
So this could be compared to like the ears of a dog that can hear a silent dog whistle where we can't. And if you had a dog up there in the space station, that might serve also to detect these leaks. But in your case, you've invented a wireless dog that will actually listen for these leaks. Is that right?
That's exactly true. So it's a small dog in the size of maybe a small shoebox that doesn't need to be fed or walked outside. So, and it will listen for you without having any demands, right?
Yeah, I could imagine taking a dog for a spacewalk. and then what would you use for a pooper scooper? I mean, that would be something else too. So, well, when you're going to make your presentation at MetroCon, what is the big takeaway you're hoping that these engineers and scientists will get from hearing the things that you have to say?
So MetroCon is a very interesting conference because it brings people together from different areas, mostly from aerospace. And what I hope is that whatever technology we develop for NASA and for space, it certainly has application on Earth that comes to my mind or your mind right now. But when I present in these conferences, it's very interesting to see that when other people from different industries listen to this, there are new applications that I never thought of comes to their mind. But that's my hope, to inspire people to think about using very low-cost hardware to listen to ultrasonic sounds, listen to what we have done in terms of the software that makes these work with high reliability, and then apply it to the problems that they have. Maybe somebody comes there from oil and gas industry and realize, oh, maybe we should put some of these boxes inside the offshore drilling platforms so that we don't create another spill in the Gulf, or maybe in people's home to avoid propane leak or things like that. So there is always opportunity to get these technologies, modify them, adopt them, and have something here on Earth for people to use and have a better quality of life.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Ultrasound could be used in so many applications, including in the home. I mean, every once in a while, there's a gas leak in somebody's home, and the home blows up and kills everybody in the house. If there was a built-in ultrasound sensor, you wouldn't have to worry that your dog was gonna notice it. You would have that built into the connections at the house. Is that where we're going with this?
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly true.
So inspiring other people to use the applications of ultrasound is one of the things that you hope to accomplish when you're speaking at Metricon. I understand you're co-inventor of the wireless sensors for brain injury detection. Now, that's going to be way out there somewhere, in more in outer space than what we've even been talking about. How do you do wireless sensors for brain injury detection? Is that what I'm seeing here?
Yes, that's correct. So that's also another discovery that kind of happened without any planning. So I was collaborating with a neuroscientist on a totally different project. It was a little bit of a space in it, so we were thinking about these very small signals that are coming from space and being detected by radio telescopes, and we were trying to see how we can extract very small levels of signals from high levels of noise. So that was kind of a problem in conjunction of like electrical engineering, physics, and neuroscience. And the neuroscience collaborator I had was interested to see if they can use that technique to get the brain waves out of very small newborn infant's brain, which were in high risk of sudden infant death and complications like that. So out of that whole project, we came up with this theory that if you have problems in your brain, if it's physical injury, for example, let's say an army veteran who came back from war has been exposed to traumatic brain injury, or if it's just an athlete who had a concussion or head, his head like physically got hit, or it's just a newborn infant which is trying to improve its cognitive capabilities of its brain very rapidly. In all these cases, these brain injuries can be mapped into changes during the sleep. So when you're sleeping, the way you move during the sleep, the way your heart rate changes, the way your respiration frequency or breathing rate changes, all these have a relationship with your brain activity and changes in your cognitive ability. So we have developed these wireless sensors, which we embed inside the mattress. You go home and sleep on it. You don't see the sensors. There is no wires like the ones in a sleep labs. There is no video camera to monitor people like in a sleep labs. So it's very easy to use and very easy to monitor your sleep activities. And we have evidence that we show that we can actually detect mild traumatic brain injury, which you cannot detect using MRI or other techniques. We can detect probably like onset of cognitive deterioration, which may lead into Alzheimer's or dementia or things like that. So we have a large area of people from senior citizen and aging population to army veterans, to athletes, newborns. They all can benefit from this. So we have been working on this for almost 7-8 years now. We have a product, we have a patent on it, so we hope very soon this will be commercialized and ready for people to use.
Now, these sensors then, unlike the other sensors we're talking about that use audio detection, this is electrical signal detection to be able to detect the onset of Alzheimer's? Is that what we're saying?
So these sensors that we embed in the mattress, they are called piezo-resistive sensors. So it's multiple layers of electrical conductors sandwiched in between some kind of sticky piezo-resistive ink. So when you push on them and press your finger or your body movement on them, they keep changing their resistance. And we have a network of these sensors all over the mattress. So they can sense large-scale movement during a sleep, like when you toss and turn in the bed. they can also sense your breathing rate and other parameters that you're interested in. And they are not acoustic. These are all electrical sensors.
Okay, they're all electrical. They're not acoustic. That answers that question there. And you're talking about the tossing and turning and sleep apnea and that sort of thing. What I was really concerned about is early onset dementia or concussions or things like that. You can detect that too with this electrical?
So basically, what we have right now is that we can show there is capability of changing cognitive deterioration. We can show that how your sleep behavior will change during your lifetime. And once people start to go through phases, let's say dementia started to happen or maybe Alzheimer's started to happen, the sleep behavior is the first thing that starts to change before we actually see things in our daily life. So we hope that this can be used for that. We haven't done clinical trials of that yet. We are in the process of getting to that stage, but I think after that, I can say for sure this is going to be useful there. But these are at this point mostly conjectures of other applications we have tested.
So what you're saying is that when someone has got onset dementia or Alzheimer's coming on, that a way to detect that can be sleep patterns? I mean, their patterns or their sleep changes, and that would be a sign that there could be something wrong?
Exactly. There are some literature on this in terms of publications that my collaborator in neuroscience has and some of her colleagues, and there are evidence that these are all going to relate to our sleep. So it's kind of an indirect way of detecting what's going on in brain compared to the conventional methods today, which if you have experienced, let's say, like forgetting something and you go to the doctor, they quickly prescribe CT scan or MRI. And those techniques, they will show physical changes in the brain, they show physical damage, but our method is more like an indirect method that does not invade basically your body with X-ray or other harmful radiations, but it's much more powerful to detect things which are changing very slowly compared to conventional methods.
Wow. Dr. Abadi, what have we missed? What did I neglect to ask you that you want to get across to the listeners?
No, you pretty much covered everything. So my area of specialty is wireless communication and wireless sensor networks. And in Metrocon specifically, I'm going to talk about the ISS leak detection system. But we have done several projects for NASA in the past 10 years or so with one of them being the most interesting one was inflatable lunar habitat monitoring, which kind of led into this leak detection project, led into the brain injury sensor project, led into another project which we could detect impacts to inflatables. And what I just want to say is that most of the technologies developed for space, if you think about them, they will actually impact some of the problems we have in daily life, and I'm sure you can come up with tons of examples of prior space technology that is being used today. So thanks again, Amin, for giving me the opportunity to talk about these, and I hope people think a little bit more about what we can use here on Earth from a space technology.
Absolutely fascinating, Dr. Abadi. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, Dr. Abadi, we have to break at the half hour, and when we come back, I'm going to want to ask you to maybe look into the future for us and give us a prediction of what you see down the road, and maybe a little bit of the voice of reason, something that we can take around with us, make our life a little easier. We'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Well, Blaise Pascal, the heart has reason, of which the head knows nothing.